Hi, I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts for Vermont Edition. I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Later in the show, we're going to hear from UVM professor Richard Watts. He's going to tell us about what local journalism means today and how a new program he's running is using college students to help bring local news to rural areas. But first, let's dive into what's going on with the Vermont College of Fine Arts in Montpelier. Now, for a little context, in 1981, it only offered graduate degrees in writing. But since then, it's expanded to offer Masters of Fine Arts degrees in visual arts, writing for children and young adults, graphic design, and in 2013, added film. Also, according to the website, there are just over 350 students enrolled in the college. But the drama started last summer when the college announced plans to end on-campus residencies in Montpelier and offer them on other campuses and virtually, getting rid of any residency in Vermont. On top of that, this year, the college reached an agreement to sell three of their buildings, which will be turned into a wellness center and a community space. This has students, faculty, and alumni concerned about the future of the college. To walk us through some of the decision-making process, I want to welcome President of the Vermont College of Fine Arts, Leslie Ward. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Connor. It's wonderful to be here.
So, Leslie, to get us started, will you just tell us about the Vermont College of Fine Arts? What kind of students do you produce and where do they end up?
Yeah, thank you, Connor. I appreciate the opportunity. First of all, I want to just do a slight correction on your history. While our writing program did start in 1981, we were not the Vermont College of Fine Arts then. Our programs up until 2008 were always embedded in larger colleges with large infrastructure.
Thank you for that correction.
Right. Well, it's important because it's part of this whole narrative. We are a low residency school. And what does that mean? It means we are a model, a school with a model that's designed specifically for adult students with very busy lives. Our students range from 25 to 75. They get paired up with a faculty mentor and create an individualized study plan, and they get to work from their home communities. We have students who are doing this program all over the country and indeed, in some cases, all over the world. However, every 6 months, our students gather together for what we call a residency. It's a 9-day period when students and faculty get together for lectures, performances, readings, film screenings, and critiques. It's a very densely packed time and very inspirational and often very transformative for our students. But as far as the physical time for the program, it only is 9 days each semester, which comes up to about 6% of the time there's students here. And that's important because we don't have students living on campus paying room and board fees for 9 or 10 months out of the year like a residential college does. And yet we have an entire campus to support.
All right. So then what kind of students do y'all produce?
Well, as you talked about, we have six programs, program in writing. They're all graduate programs. We have programs in writing, writing for children and young adults, music composition, graphic design, film, and visual art. Many of our students are already deep into their careers and come in order to further them and deepen their practice. And some of our students are in mid-career and they've been lawyers or doctors or teachers, and they want to take what has been an avocation and turn it into a more serious vocation. So we get students from all walks of life for just a huge variety of reasons.
And you've had an interesting journey with the college, starting with you being a student yourself. So tell us about the evolution of where you've come, how you've come to where being the president.
Yeah, I started as a student in 2014. I'm a Vermont resident, and I was in the writing program. And I have to say, I was absolutely astonished by the sense of community and the impact this program had on me. I already have a graduate degree in something else, but this program, I think, was more challenging, asked more of me, and yet I think I grew and felt supported more than I had ever felt in any other educational institution. So it was a wonderful experience. And then I was asked to be on the board a couple years after I graduated. And then when there was a change of leadership, the board asked if I would be the interim president. And later on in that year, they asked if I would take on the role of president. And that was in 2019. So I was one of those college presidents that stepped in right before the pandemic happened.
And how has the college changed over the year? You know, later on in the show, in just a few moments, we're going to talk about some big changes that have been announced and have been discussed and debated. And I just want to know, how has the college life and everything changed?
Well, in general, the pandemic certainly opened up opportunities for us in terms of thinking about how do we use remote learning and digital learning. And while we are now doing our residencies in person again, what we've learned is, particularly in some of our larger programs, which would be the two writing programs, we're able to help serve more students by continuing to offer a remote residency track. And we've gotten better and better at making that a very rich and rewarding experience. So that's been one of the changes. We also created a, we worked with faculty and staff in 2021 to identify four strategic initiatives that really shape our decisions. One is access to programs, including increased scholarship, a commitment to equity and empowerment across everything we do, a lifelong commitment to really helping our artists after they get their artistic development here to enrich their careers with professional development and be their lifelong partner in that. And then finally, to support the impact that arts can have in social justice and moving social issues forward. So that those initiatives have really shaped how we think about where we put our resources and what's important to the future of the school.
So what is important to the future of the school? Is it just viability, or does it go beyond that?
Well, you know, of course you want to be viable, but why? And that's always the big question. You know, what is your purpose? And so for us, we really believe that arts are essential to our humanity, to connecting with each other and understanding each other. And that creates the platform for conversation, curiosity, problem solving, and for creating new solutions. I really believe, and our community really believes, that the arts are the place where people can come together and lower the divides that we see happening in our societies, understand each other through the arts, and then have open, curious, and civil conversations about how we want to move forward. So we think the arts are extraordinarily important. So what's important to the school in terms of supporting that agenda, as I said, is access to these programs, scholarships, making sure our programs are relevant and are relevant to all people from all across different backgrounds, to support those careers once people leave here, because we know that there isn't always equity in what people bring to this program as they then go out to launch their careers, and to make an absolute commitment to social justice as part of the arts.
Let's go to Robin in Seattle, Washington. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello, President Ward. I'm a graduate of the MFA program from 2006 in writing. And I'm calling I think that you mischaracterized the amount of time that students were actually on the campus. There are six MFA programs at the school, each with two residencies per year of about 10 days apiece. I think they've recently been shortened down to maybe nine. So that actually puts students on the campus 120 days a year. And beyond that, there were also conferences. There were graduate reunions and novel conferences that extended the amount of time that was on there. So many of us feel as if your representation of the use of the campus is incorrect.
Thank you for that call, Robin. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I'm so glad, Robin, you gave me the opportunity to talk about that. You're absolutely correct. We run our programs in a sequential fashion right now, asynchronously. So while it is true that students are here only for 9 days out of each semester, we were running 12 semesters in succession. And that did come out to about 3 months of students. And then we had two other conferences that were a week apiece. What I will say is this, we know that our campus is not large enough to have more than one program at a time on here. And we also know that students, particularly now in the arts, are looking for cross-disciplinary collaboration, inspiration. The lines have been blurring between programs. And we really felt that to continue to be vibrant and relevant, we needed to be able to offer more interdisciplinary opportunities. So moving our residencies to a larger campus with outstanding facilities allows us to have all of our programs together in a residency at the same time. And now a writing student will be able to take a screenwriting semester if they'd like. Collaboration can happen. A graphic design student can be collaborating with a poetry student to create a book of poetry and artwork. So there are so many opportunities that will open up. And and we really need to be able to do that in order to stay relevant as an art school.
Robin, I want to go back to, did she answer your question?
Well, she did correct it, the account of time. I would like to just argue for the old model in the sense that when I went to Vermont College as a student, when I walked on to the campus and it was only writers there, I felt as if I were meeting the people I'd been trying to meet my entire life. It was as if I didn't have to explain myself anymore. I believe that the other arts, the music going on, would be a distraction to that tight community that allows a person to delve deeply into their own genre. That nature of a small community really helps to build communication between writers. So I would disagree with the direction the college wants to take.
Thank you so much, Robin, for that call. I do want to move on. But before we do, Leslie, do you want to respond to that, or how do you respond to that?
You know, I just want to say I really respect that everybody has a really different learning style. Our goal in doing these residencies together is to have it be an and, not an or. We're organizing the residencies physically on the campus that where we will be at in order to create that small program community and interaction, and yet offer the students who increasingly over the last, I would say, decade or two want more inspiration across programs will be able to do that. There certainly won't be any requirement for that.
I do want to go back to the phones, and I want to talk to Jennifer in Iowa. Jennifer, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to ask my questions. I'm actually a graduate of the visual art program from 2019, and I have a couple of questions, and I'll try to make them fast. Leslie, why did you and the board ignore the college bylaws and make the decisions with no outreach or attempt to involve the community in the discussions related to the decision to move residencies out of state and sell all its Montpelier campus buildings except College Hall? And why did the Board of Trustees not consider alternative ways to downsize and update the campus, increase fundraising capacity, and make use of community loyalty while exploring other local and regional campus options in the interim?
Jennifer, thank you so much for those questions. President Ward, I'll start with the ignoring the college bylaws. And this has been a critique that I've seen a couple times. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to do a larger response, but let me get to the technical piece. We did not ignore bylaws. And in fact, some students who felt that we did and faculty applied to our accreditors, the New England Council of Higher Education, and registered a complaint We responded to that complaint, and they were very satisfied with our response and have approved us to move forward with our plan. Let me also say a couple of things. The changes we're making are in response to needing to create a financially stable model for the future of the programs. This college cannot afford, without room and board and a residential population, we cannot afford to sustain and support this beautiful campus. It's not fair to the town, and it's not fair to our college. The way this decision got made, given the nature, the important nature of it, both fiscally and strategically, it had to be led by the Board of Trustees. That is in the bylaws. Our trustees are a group that includes a lot of our alumnics across programs, and they represent have that representation on the board. And the board also reached out to staff leadership that represent every constituent group in the college. So we had our head of student services, we had the head of alumnus affairs, we had our dean of faculty, we had the head of HR representing staff, and certainly I was part of that decision. So there was a lot of representation, and we were very, very thoughtful about the lenses through which we were looking at this issue. And we considered many, many different paths forward.
And then also, I guess you responded to most of that, but how do you respond to the criticism and maybe the concerns that some of the students, faculty, and alumni have?
Well, I will say that as soon as we made this decision, we, the board and myself, both together and singly, had about over 20 meetings with students, faculty, and alums. Over the course of several months, we listened very carefully to their feedback, and we've incorporated many of the important things that they told us, and we continue to involve them as we plan these residencies going forward.
I think a lot of people, and again, just like reading some of the critiques, say that there was a lack of transparency when it came to some of these decisions. And there was not only that, but there was a lack of input from from students, faculty, and alumni. Where's the disconnect in communication, you think?
Look, when change happens, it's really, really difficult for people to absorb it. And often difficult for people to imagine something different than what was so wonderful and so transformative and so grounding for them. This was a decision that the board felt needed to be made at the board level with representation from every single aspect of our community. But they didn't feel it was a decision that could be made by committee. Part of that was really feeling that a lot of rumors would be circulated on social media that might harm the college's reputation. So I do understand that there are a group of people, it's a minority of our population, that really feel very strongly that this should have been done in a different way. I really respect that. And the board really considered many, many ways of going forward. And they really were comfortable with their expertise, the alumnics representation on the board, and the fact that students, faculty, staff, and alums all had representation in the leadership team giving them input.
And Leslie, on that note, I want to read an email that we got from a listener and says, I made the enormous decision in 2022 to upend my life and attend an MFA program at VCFA. Everything that has been happening with VCFA has been incredibly disappointing. It's hard to imagine it wasn't all in the works when I enrolled, which is also hard to view. It is also hard not to view as fraudulent. I am even considering appealing to have my FAFSA loan forgiven. Thankfully, the news broke right before my second semester was about to begin, so I immediately withdrew. But all in all, the move is shocking. No one, including teachers, staff, alumni, or students, seem to have been consulted beforehand. So, President Ward, there's a lot to unpack there, but I just want to get your initial reaction to hearing that from a former student.
You know, we're always disappointed when the decisions the college makes don't feel supportive and enriching to our students. We certainly gave students the opportunity to new students who did not know about this to certainly make the choice. It sounds like this student did. We really feel that we announced this new decision as soon as we could. We needed to have a signed agreement with the college, with Colorado College, where we're holding the summer residencies. So sometimes there's a timing issue that you just can't avoid. We have done everything we can to support students and make them feel whole. Most students do, and I understand that there are some who don't, and I really have a lot of empathy for that, and I know that change is hard for folks.
Is that kind of like the message, that change is hard and this is just what is going to happen?
Well, Connor, we don't really have a choice. I think the piece that people choose not to hear is that the college cannot afford this campus. We have tried over the, it never could. It had a, when the New England College, New England Culinary Institute was here, there was an entire other college that used just the right amount of buildings so they could be residential here and pay us rent, but not inflict on the space that we needed. That was a unicorn a tenant. We haven't found, they went out of business. We haven't found another tenant that can replace them. The school, we work very hard to fundraise. Since I've gotten here, we've increased our fundraising by 4 times, but it's not enough. We have a small group of alums, and our alums are artists. Most of them are not investment bankers and private equity managers. So they've been incredibly generous, but we're not getting, you know, $25, $35, $45, $55 million donations from folks. And I think what is really the conversation needs to start at the fact that we can't afford this campus. And more importantly, or as importantly, I should say, we need to be able to imagine the future for future students. We made a commitment to equity and empowerment. We made a commitment to increasing scholarships so that we could have a more diverse, more broad representation of people who have a lot to offer the art world. We made a commitment to support our alums in their careers by offering professional development opportunities. That's important. That's serious stuff. If we continue to try to support this campus, which we can't, that is a lot of resources that don't go to supporting the value of the MFA degree. And my job is to look forward and to help this college, help the board of directors, work with my leadership team and my program directors and faculty to envision how can we best support artists of the future.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation, and that is Sidney Lee of Newberry. He was a charter trustee and instructor for 13 years at VCFA, as well as the Poet Laureate of Vermont from 2011 to 2015. Sidney, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very interesting discussion.
So I just want to just hear what your, like, what are your biggest complaints when it comes to the direction that VCFA is going?
Well, I just wonder what's Vermont about it. An administrative building, nothing else. I don't know if any other facilities were sought for within the state, but if the residency is going to be in Pennsylvania and Colorado, why do we call it Vermont College of the Fine Arts? If President Ward's assessment of the future is proper, why not rename the institution in a way that will more adequately reflect her ambitions? And she says that every constituent body was consulted about this, and there were all these meetings with the faculty, for example. It seems odd then to me that 15 teachers have resigned and their 4 program heads have resigned. That may tell us something. I have a, and then now, mind you, I may be talking through my hat, and the debate may have been rich and conclusive on the BARDIS part. I really can't answer that because no one, including me, so far as I know, a charter trustee is, as you say, one who's taught there for a long, long time and then has been an ongoing financial donor, no one that I know of has seen any official records of the considerations going into this decision. And to sell the buildings, now, you see, I have a personal bone to pick on that score. We had the marvelous director of the writing program, which is the only one I really know intimately, Louise Crowley, both a saint and omnicompetent. And it was concluded by the board at that time that it would be nice to have a memorial to all her years of excellent service. And I gave a lot of money by my standards, and I raised a lot of money by my standards, to name Crowley Hall, which is now going to be a spa, as far as I can understand. And, you know, a friend of mine, a man I deeply respect, on the board, Bill Schubart, said, you know, disagrees with me. He said, well, you know, buildings are not that important anymore. It's not bricks and mortar. Things are changing to remote, blah, da, 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 da. Well, if buildings aren't important, it seems curious to me that nationwide there's this effort to rename all kinds of buildings that were erected in memory of people who, whom we as a society now tend to condemn. I'm dismayed because I don't think, apparently these discussions have been going on since 2020. And, you know, it wasn't until fairly recently that I, a charter trustee and a longtime teacher there, I learned anything about it. And I learned it by word of mouth from somebody else who had learned about it by word of mouth.
Sydney, I think you've covered a lot, and I think we have your perspective. And in the interest of time, I'm going to try to paraphrase some of what you brought up and have President Ward respond. So, President Ward, one of the first things Sydney mentioned was, what's Vermont about it if the residency programs aren't here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get that a lot. So I want to first of all say that our students do the bulk of their learning embedded in their home communities, and we've always operated our school from cities and towns around the country, and indeed, as I said earlier, around the world. But Vermont is very much in our DNA. It is our brand. We have we are known for our special magic of combining incredible rigor and incredible support. It's in our DNA. We believe the innovation we bring springs from our Vermont roots. That ethos is part of our brand, and we're very proud of it.
And the Crowley Hall bit, which is something that I think a lot of people who helped to name that building are a little dismayed by. What is there anything that you can do to preserve the legacy of people that helped the Vermont College of Fine Arts beforehand that might be losing that dedication?
Yes, I want to just say Louise Crowley was the program director of the writing program when I was there. And she has my deepest, deepest respect and regard. They were right to memorialize our gratitude for her service to this school. She was incredible. And one way of doing it, as Sydney mentioned, is to name a building after a person. Because we will no longer be owning those buildings, I have reached out to Louise and asked her to think about how we might use some of the proceeds from that building. Possibly, she hasn't had a chance yet to, she said she wanted to think about it. So we haven't had the full conversation. But I said, you know, we would still like to memorialize your contribution. It's been incredible. So should we perhaps create a scholarship from some of the proceeds for a writing student of that has certain characteristics that Louise would like to support? There are other ways of honoring the wonderful people who have made up this community and who make this college as venerable as it is.
I want to bring somebody else into the conversation, and that is Katie Trout. She's the executive director of Montpelier Alive. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, just as a quick disclaimer, Montpelier Alive is a Vermont Public underwriter. Montpelier Alive, how are they impacted by this sell and the revitalization of Montpelier?
Yeah, so Montpelier Alive is deeply involved with the local economy, downtown community development projects, revitalization, and we work closely with the businesses. And so I hear a lot of different things from the businesses about big topics like this. In fact, we meet monthly to discuss some of these issues. And I hear a lot of feedback from both sides of the story. And we know that moving any change, such as the BCFA residency moving, is going to bring certain challenges to the downtown and local economy. But I also see another side of the coin, and I have a sense of optimism around it, which I can also speak to.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we are running out of time, but I do want to hear more of that optimism, and I'll turn to President Leslie Ward about that. Katie Trouts, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. President Ward, optimism, looking forward to the future. What can you tell us about the future of VCFA and what this means to the community?
Well, for the future of VCFA, it's an opportunity for us to continue our great tradition of being one of the most innovative and nimble schools in the country. And we are really excited about the interdisciplinary opportunities and bringing our whole community together for the very first time this July. For Montpelier, we're also really excited. These buildings are wonderful buildings. We take the stewardship of this campus very seriously. And the idea that there will be businesses, this healthcare businesses that will be coming into those three buildings, possibly a small gathering exhibition center for the arts is being planned. We have two other educational institutions interested in our other buildings that have both either residential population in the higher ed space, which would mean more traffic for more merchant traffic for our wonderful town of Montpelier to have people here all year round, as opposed to coming in for just 9 days. And then one of our current tenants is looking to buy a couple of buildings, and it's the new school, and they run a wonderful program for students that don't thrive in the mainstream school system. And for them to be able to put roots down and develop their building so that they can continue to enrich their mission just makes us really happy. So the idea that we can turn buildings that are empty for much of the year into thriving places with more jobs and more people living here and more people to support Montpelier makes us really happy.
We do have to leave this conversation here. I want to thank my guests, President Leslie Ward of the Vermont State of Vermont College of Fine Arts. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Connor. I really appreciated the opportunity.